One of the prettier places in Oregon is the focus of an ongoing and occasionally ugly discussion about its fate. The Elliott State Forest is in the Coast Range in Coos and Douglas counties. At 93,000 acres, it is not even Oregon's largest state forest, but its importance and impact are large. The State Land Board meets next month to try again to come up with a way ahead for the forest. We'll look at the issues from several angles in this hour, starting with the agency that manages it, the Department of State Lands in Oregon. Jim Paul is the Assistant Director, John Potter, Senior Policy Advisor. They join us by phone here on the Jefferson Exchange. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
And you can decide how to allocate the questions because you have the option of being in the same room and pointing at each other. But so let's go way back and tell us first how the Elliott became a state forest in the first place.
Well, the Elliott became a state forest in about 1930 through consolidating scattered school trust lands that were throughout the Western Cascades into one single large block of land, the purpose for which was to generate funds for K through 12 public education in Oregon.
And about how much money had it been pulling in on average through the years?
Since 1930, when it was acquired, it was kind of burned over land. It was not very productive. So for many years, it was just growing up. In about the early 1960s, under an agreement with the State Land Board, the Department of Forestry started managing the property for the State Land Board. They generated revenues over the next 40 years or so of some significance, ranging probably in the neighborhood of about $400 million over that time period. So it was a significant producer. That, of course, has completely changed, and the business model is now in question because of policies that were necessary to adopt in order to dismiss litigation related to the Endangered Species Act. So now the forest is costing the Common School Fund rather than generating revenue.
Somewhere around $4 million a year. Is that the most recent figure I saw?
Well, since 2013, the losses have been about $4 million. It's down to around $1 million a year right now as we kind of figure out what to do. And you know, it's also losing the opportunity cost of an asset performing at a level that is comparable to other investments of the Common School Fund.
But the costs themselves, are those just due to the allocated management and payroll things that are allocated to the Elliott State Forest, for example?
Yeah, so, for example, the Department of Forestry has been spending about $24 to $27 an acre per year of its overall cost for, like, timber harvest planning, surveying for marbled murrelets, supervising harvest, replanting, and other silvicultural activities. So when harvesting activity was generating $150 to $200 an acre in revenues, the performance of this asset was really high with that sort of spending. But when it generated only $4 an acre in 2013, the asset performance was really poor. But to immediately reduce staffing to stay within available revenues would mean a failure to fulfill obligations related to reforestation and a failure to generate subsequent harvests. So we're kind of in a downward spiral from a business standpoint.
Are there statutory or constitutional mechanisms that require assets of the Common School Fund not to lose money?
Yes, Jeff, this is Jim Paul. This is essentially an endowment fund, and the primary purpose of the lands at statehood when they were acquired from the federal government is to generate revenues and support K through 12 public schools. So there is both a constitutional and actually a federal Admissions Act requirement that these lands be managed for the purpose of generating income. So the scenario of actually losing money for the fund is arguably at odds with the mandate of these lands that the land board is responsible for fulfilling.
Interesting. Wasn't aware of the statehood part that dates back to 1859 when Oregon joined the Union. How diverse is the landscape there in the Elliott State Forest? You mentioned that it was burned over, John, but was burned over, I should say. So is it sort of a mixture of cut over and old growth at this point?
The Department of Forestry managed the property in a very sort of middle ground approach over the years, which resulted in a fair amount of older age classes throughout the property, and probably about half of the forest now is 100 years or older, so quite larger trees, Douglas fir, but it's interspersed with ongoing harvested areas throughout the site. So it's very steep terrain and poses challenges from a management standpoint for that reason.
And if I could just add to that, too, in terms of the long-term history of this property, the large majority of it, maybe 90-95% of it, was burned over about 150, 170 years ago. The remaining few percentage that didn't burn had been about 300 years since those stands had last burned. So we have a very small percent that are in the 200 to 300 year range, but the large majority is between 150 years and as young as a few years old where it's been managed recently for timber.
We're talking about Oregon's Elliott State Forest and a way ahead to come up with a management plan for it or a disposition of it. We're talking to John Potter, Senior Policy Advisor at the Oregon Department of State Lands, and Assistant Director Jim Paul. We'll be talking in a couple of other chunks about the Elliott State Forest through the hour. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone anywhere in our listening area or by email at jx@jeffnet.org. John, you referenced some of the concerns about litigation and things. So the forest is home to spotted owls and marbled merlets, as I understand it, and a number of environmental concerns coalesce around those critters and forest management more generally, as I understand it.
Yes, and also it supports quite high populations of coastal coho salmon, another issue of concern for management of the property.
And so what was the litigation about?
There's been a series of litigation over the years. The one that I was referring to was a challenge against the approach of the Department of Forestry in managing without a habitat conservation plan on the property. And so that means that they were trying to manage without any take of those listed species. And their policies were, in order to dismiss that lawsuit, the Department of Forestry agreed to moderate its policies to make sure that there was no question of any take of listed species, but that has resulted in a situation where we're now not able to generate any revenues. And from the endowment standpoint, that is a serious problem that is why we're addressing this.
So is cutting down to zero, or is there any still going on?
There is still some ongoing management on the property. It's just not generating enough revenues to cover the cost at this time.
Now, it seems like the State Land Board had a way ahead a year ago. What happened to that process?
I believe you're referring to the new management plan that the Land Board adopted that went into effect in 2012, which they adopted after attempting for more than a decade to actually update habitat conservation plan and put one in effect. Instead, they decided to direct the department to go the route of trying to find a balanced approach through an alternative management plan. And this is the management plan that was subject to the litigation John was just discussing.
But was it December of last year the Land Board met and decided not to go ahead with an auction?
Well, yes. Yeah, so during the course of 2014, this Elliott Alternatives Project started up. And what we did was we went around to a wide range of stakeholders, both locally and across the state, who have an interest in this property. And we looked at a range of management alternatives and came to the Land Board in December of 2014, at which time they put the idea of a public auction kind of on hold and asked us to do additional work on three options for moving forward. One was to investigate whether getting a new manager could lead to cutting costs and generate enough revenues for the property to be worthwhile to continue in common school fund ownership. The second was trying to negotiate a revised habitat conservation plan to give more assurances around harvest with protecting the endangered species, but also harvesting at a level that would allow it to remain a solid, good asset of the common school fund.
That's the HCP that will probably get referenced a few more times in the hour, the habitat conservation plan. Go ahead.
That's correct, the HCP. So those are the first two options. And the third was an option of transferring the ownership to an entity that does not have the same trust responsibilities as the Land Board. However, the Land Board expressed an interest in either having that be continue to be a public ownership or somehow protect the public outcomes, the public values that people have in the property.
So that would seem to limit the sorts of entities that the transfer. We're talking transfer or sale here.
Well, it's really the same thing. Any movement of the property out of the common school fund, so it's no longer a common school fund asset, any transfer of it is going to involve a sale of some sort or an exchange.
So are there then any particular limits on who could buy or restrictions on how the land could be used just based on the framework that's been set up thus far?
Well, no. So the state land board has not made a decision about moving forward with this approach. What we're trying to do is figure out, is there some sort of approach like this that they could support, that they would want us to move forward on? And that's why we're going around and doing an additional series of workshops during the month of July in Coos Bay, in Roseburg, in Salem, and in Portland to get input from people about coming up with this sort of an approach. We're really trying to design it at this point.
And Jeff, if I could add on the question of limits, from a legal perspective, the only quote-unquote limit is that the property must maximize the value of any transfer and maximize the benefits to the fund and essentially perceive fair market value. However, the land board has expressed an interest that if we can meet that mandate and also put some requirements around public outcomes that want to be achieved, if it does sell, they would like the department to do everything we can to achieve those outcomes as well.
So this is a tricky place to be. Clearly, you're trying to generate enough money to get some cash into the common school fund as dictated by the state constitution and statutory provisions as well, in addition to the federal obligations, and yet also make sure that you're protecting species and staying out of court.
That's right. Yes, it's very difficult and a challenge for us to keep the common school fund whole, but also see if there's a way to protect certain public values in the property.
Okay, the last release we had about meetings, the work sessions you mentioned, I see July 7th coming up in Portland for timber and production interests and statewide conservation organizations, meetings for local government and economic development interests in Coos Bay on July 16th, and also one for local conservation organizations same day in Coos Bay. Is that still the plan?
Yes, that is the plan.
And how did that first meeting go yesterday?
We had a very good meeting with education beneficiaries yesterday and got some great feedback from them on how to design this and keep their interests of making sure that the common school fund stays whole and that the primary public outcome of increasing the endowment for K-12 public schools is met.
All right, a tricky business. The State Land Board meets on August 13th. We've been talking about the LA State Forest with Jim Paul, the Assistant Director of the Oregon Department of State Lands, and Senior Policy Advisor John Potter. Thank you both, gentlemen, for joining us today on The Exchange.
Absolutely welcome.
Thank you very much.
All right, you bet.